Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me again for, Mickey Fault. He's been with me several times, and he's known as the mercenary geologist. He, as the name implies, is looking for ways, looking for rocks that he can turn into money. He's a mercenary geologist, so can't blame him for that, and there's nothing wrong with that. We want to make profits. Profits is what capitalism thrives on, and capitalism is the one economic system that really increases wealth for everybody, even if it's not always equal. Well, it isn't going to be equal. It's going to be, but it is the best system that we've had, and unfortunately, there seems to be a disdain for capitalism that I think is something that's been drummed into us through our educational process. But anyway, that's editorializing. Doesn't belong in this segment. Welcome, Mickey. Good to have you back with me.
It's always my pleasure to be here, Jay.
Really good to have you here, and I might just mention the conference this past weekend was quite interesting, wasn't it?
Oh, it was just tremendous. I had one of the best times I've ever had at a conference, and it was a little bit out of the ordinary for what you and I usually do, but we're both libertarians, I think, and this was libertarians and hard assets people and people that don't think debt's the way to go, and there were a couple of so-called anarcho-capitalists thrown in, but it was really fun, and the people that attended were intelligent and thinking people, and so the feedback we got was quite good too, I thought.
Absolutely, I agree with you wholeheartedly on that, and the anarcho-capitalists were there were a couple of them there, and Jeff Berwick's been on this show. I like Jeff a lot, and I think he makes a lot of good points about it. I'm not quite sure that I agree completely with Jeff on that issue, but in any event, I should let people know, for those that aren't familiar with Mickey, he is, as I mentioned, a certified professional geologist, and he has a BS in Earth Sciences with honor from the University of Tulsa, Master's of Science in Geology from the University of New Mexico, and he's been the last 35 years exploring and developing mineral properties. So I thought it's time to talk to another geologist. Actually, we've got Brent Cook coming on later today, too. So we're giving you a double dose of geologists today, but both of these gentlemen are highly respected. And Mickey, I just want to say, this is really a tough time for this sector, isn't it? Have you seen it tougher any time?
Oh, I think I have seen it tougher, Jay, and I would say that the period from post-BREX and when after all the juniors ran out of money then, so personally for me the toughest time was 99 through 2002, but toward the end of 2002, the people in the know in the business started making some rumblings. We saw some movement in the gold price, and by July of 2003, man, we took off again. So this these commodities go in cycles, and they're often divergent from the general business cycle. So it's just something we have to weather here.
Yeah, that's right. Well, it is a very tough business, though. Mining is an extremely difficult business, I would say. It seems to me it requires an awful lot of capital. It requires an awful lot of time. There's geopolitical concerns, more or less, depending on where you're at. There's, environmental issues. There's uncertainty of the prices of metals, as you know. Where do you think we're at in this gold market now?
Well, we're hopefully near the bottom. I do some charting and some ratios on a monthly basis, and here's what I've noticed. So we'll use the Toronto Venture Exchange as the proxy for the health of the junior resource sector. So that is now approaching historic lows that we set in late 08 and early 09. Today, it's about 875. The lows, in that period, 3 month lows in late 08, early 09 was about 766. So we still got a ways to go to, but another thing I track is the venture exchange to the gold ratio. And 3 years ago we were at about the same gold price, around $1,200 plus or minus, and then the venture exchange ratio gold ratio was 1.2, and today it's 0.7. So that illustrates the divergence of first stocks and gold, and then lately we've had this big divergence between paper gold and physical gold, and it certainly is paper gold that's driving the price down, in my opinion.
It seems to be the case, Mickey, because we're hearing that there are record imports of gold into Asia, into China, and the Indians. Of course, the Indian government is trying to put the kibosh on importing gold into India, but the Indians apparently are finding ways and paying premium prices to get gold into their country as well. So it seems like the fundamentals for gold are very, very strong, not in the U.S., where people seem not to understand too much or have too much interest in buying gold. They still believe in the dollar to a great extent, I guess. But, you know, I was just looking at another indicator, Mickey. This is the S&P TSX Global Gold Index that Stockwatch has.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking, and this looks like a triple bottom here. We go back to where we actually dropped. It's at 160, and it was as high as 440.
Mm-hmm.
That was back in 2011. It was higher. It was above 440. But we go back now to the 2003, where it was below one, right at one, a little above 160. We dropped to 160 now, which is equal to where we were after 2008. So it does seem to be at extreme lows, and you would have to think that we must be somewhere near the bottom on gold. So let's keep our fingers crossed, I suppose, because it is getting a little bit difficult for some people. But on the other hand, I suppose you would agree with me, Mickey, being a capitalist as you are,
mm-hmm.
it's not a bad thing to have some companies disappear either.
Well, no, and I think the gold industry itself is to blame for a lot of its own difficulties. You know, the margins of gold miners are no better than they were when gold was $300 an ounce back in 2000 and early 2003 before this boom started. And the juniors themselves, really have no value. They list properties on the left side of the balance sheets as assets, but they're really liabilities. So the juniors, what happens, these are speculative markets, and when the markets get frothy in a bull market, everybody can raise money, every project looks good, and valuations go out the roof. But in reality, very few of these juniors ever succeed. So we saw this phenomena post-crash from, say, the end of the first quarter of 2009 to the end of the first quarter of 2011, where we had this raging bull market, and a lot of juniors that didn't really belong raised a lot of money, and now that's coming to bear because a lot of that money just went up in smoke. It went to G&A and parties and salaries and expenses and et cetera, with very little of it in some instances put in the ground, and certainly most of it not productive, even if it was put in the ground.
Yeah. Well, certainly, though, some of it was put in the ground, and there are companies that have drill data, I would think, that are not going to be able to use it now because they're broke. And there are companies that survive that will be in the driver's seat and able to pick up some good values. You, like Brazil Resources, I believe, was one of the companies you said you would like to talk about. Can you give us your feelings on Brazil? Are they one of those that could be a predator and able to pick up some good properties?
Well, absolutely, and they've already picked up one good property last year from Luna Gold in Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
As I think you cover this company too, and I cover it, and I'm a stockholder, so mm-hmm. I'm obviously financially biased in my opinion.
Yeah,
but this
too.
Has a very good management. Same people run Uranium Energy Corp. They have a tight share structure. They still got around $4 million in a bank, and they are certainly on the hunt right now. And I actually expect. I don't have any information regarding this, but knowing their business model, I expect them to make a splash here in the next few months with some sort of asset acquisition, and it's going to be something that's distressed. I would imagine it's going to be in Brazil, and I imagine it's going to be something they can make into a mine.
Mm-hmm. Well, they do have some good backing there, too, Mickey. They have financial, I think it's a professional, a native Brazilian that perhaps is a fund manager or a banker, that they have some
mm-hmm.
pretty deep pockets there, too, don't they, which is really
yeah,
important.
Yeah, they do, and I think you're probably referring to Brazil Invest. And
yeah.
that's one of the largest funds in Brazil and very much involved in the natural resource sector, amongst other things. But they have a who's who board. They have very strong financial backing in the country of Brazil, They've got a good cadre of technical people in Brazil. So I go down my list, and at the current share price of about 80 cents or so, down from a historic average price a few months ago of about $1.20, this looks like it could be an interesting stock to accumulate in periods of weakness.
Yeah, that's the Brazil Resources symbol, BRI, on the Toronto and BRIZF down here in the States. 41.3 million shares only, Mickey. That's a market cap around $33 million. Another stock, a copper stock, you wanted to talk about briefly. We have about 2 minutes left.
Okay.
And that is Curis Resources. CUV is the symbol on the Toronto, and I think it's PCCRF on the U.S. What can you tell us about that one?
Well, Curis is, first of all, a Hunter Dickinson company, so There's a good mark right there. Once again, a tight share structure. They are developing a in-situ recovery wellfield copper project in southeast Arizona near the town of Florence. This is a deposit that has been known for a number of years. In-situ recovery of copper would be the same, very much equivalent to in-situ recovery of uranium.
Mm-hmm.
It's been done many times in brownfields projects. This would be the first greenfield project. They are one permit away from building a test mine facility. As soon as that happens, we could expect copper production in around 6 months. But they've been delayed in this permit, and it's an EPA permit, and supposedly it's basically signed, sealed, and delivered. But I have to think that the Obama administration, I'm going to do a little politicking here, has kind of put the kibosh on the EPA. The EPA is since a lame duck session of Congress has just been sitting on its thumbs and not approving anything.
Mm-hmm.
So once that happens, though, I think this will get built. And if you look at the pre-feasibility study, the economics are stupendously robust, I would say.
Really?
And it looks like a real winner to me. Yeah, it's got a net present value of well over $500 million, a capex of about $200, all-in life of mine costs of production of about $1.25 a pound copper. Compare that to today's price of $3.15.
Wow, that's really something. Well, a $31 million market cap against a $500 million NPV, but $200 million is a pretty steep amount of money for a little company like this to raise. Can they do it on project financing, or how will they do that?
Well, I think a lot of it's going to be an offtake, and they have an offtake to finance the first part with Red. That was a $40 million facility. They did a $6 million private placement to top off their kitty here about a month and a half ago, if memory serves. They did $6 million at 88 cents with no warrant, so they're trading below that right now. So being a Hunter Dickinson company, and Jay, you're certainly familiar with those companies. I know you covered Northern Dynasty when a penny stock, and so there's about a 100 bagger or something there.
Yeah, excellent, Mickey. Well, great, a couple of great ideas there. Thank you so much. We are out of time, unfortunately. A lot more we could talk to you about, so we'll have to have you back again sometime soon. Thank you so much for your time, Mickey. Good to see you again.
Thanks a lot,
Jay. Good to see you. Take care. All the best.